to get me through the day. Give me some
hardware
so I can make my pay.
Hardware
so I won't have to work.
Hardware,
quit acting like a jerk.
Resellers and industry insiders discussing the secondary IT hardware market. Available weekly via RSS or download at refurbradio.com so you can listen while you IM your 20 best broker buddies.
Refurb Radio, Episode 5, UNITA, the Network World's Rebel Alliance. This is Corey Donovan, refurbradio.com, in the studio today. We're back. Today's guests, of course, are UNITA, the United Network Equipment Dealers Association. We have a few of the leaders from that group on. We'll get to them in just a moment. Marty, our co-host, is out for one last week before he comes back next week. But we've invited Bill Keefe to co-host this week. He's our Cisco Wholesale Product Manager. And Bill, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's great to be here. As Marty would say, I'm excited.
That's right. So this is going to be your first interop that you're going to this year. We're sending a number of people. You know, you haven't made it in the past for some reason.
That's because I stayed back as the designated salesperson. But this year, I get to be the participant and not the designated driver.
Yeah, you won't be behind the wheel this time. You know, I just wanted to let guys know that if you want to, you know, find a vibrant guy, say hello to me or Bill or Kevin or the other guys that'll be there. We're going to be sporting orange shoes at this conference. No joke, but they're stylish orange shoes. So look down, look for the orange feet, and say hello to a vibrant person at Interop this year. I want to get right into the program because we've got three dynamic guests on today. I'm really excited about the topics that we're going to discuss about the networking world and the Cisco world. So let's get right to it. First off, we've got Mike Sheldon. He's the president of UNITA. He's also the CEO and co-owner of Network Hardware Resale, a Santa Barbara, California-based reseller that has been around since the 1980s, 1986. Philosophy graduate from MIT. And Mike, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Corey. Glad to be here.
Yeah, you bet. You've had a fair amount of visibility lately. Do you carry a security detail with you at all times?
Only maybe at Interop.
Good.
No, we're happy to have the publicity. A lot of it's centered around UNITA, which is what we're here to talk about today. Network Hardware is certainly glad to have it, but there's a lot of work we need to do on behalf of all the dealers, so
okay.
We're happy to be here.
That's great. Thanks, Mike. Our other guest is John Stafford, and John is UNITA's Vice President and Membership Chair. He's the Wholesale Services Director and COO over at Network Liquidators. They're based in sunny Florida, although he works out of Santa Barbara, and they've been in business for over 20 years, and John's been in the industry over 10 years. John, are you there?
Yes, sir, Corey. Thanks for having us on the show.
Yeah, it's our honor and pleasure to do so.
Hey, John, this is Bill Keefe. I just had a question. I was visiting your website yesterday and was reading your bio and saw your picture there.
I get this a lot.
The question is, you look amazingly like David Hasselhoff. Any comment on that?
When I'm normally asked that question, I like to point out that it's a younger David Hasselhoff, but I do get that question a lot.
That's true. Our third guest is Conrad Vicroy. He's the UNITA Ethics Chair. We'll really pound on the counterfeit issue. And he's with Duane Whitlow Incorporation, based in Addison, Texas, a dealer that's been around since 1977. And Conrad, you're often known as the Shakespeare of the network equipment list.
Some people call me other things than that. I'm happy to be here with you guys.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks a lot, guys. Well, to get things started off, you know, I think we should briefly explain a little bit about UNITA's background, if anyone wants to take a chance with that, such as, you know, when did it begin, why was it founded, what is its task, you know, who would like to address that?
This is Mike. I'll take that one.
Okay, great.
UNITA was really a sort of a grassroots movement more than a formally formed association. The secondary market for Cisco is huge.
Yep.
I know somewhere in the recent publicity, Cisco was magnanimous in granting us $200 or $300 million in sales. I think it's probably 10 times that. Even Gartner put it at $1.5 to $2 billion a couple of years ago worldwide.
Wow.
And the quantity, the sheer quantity of dealers in secondary market networking, and that means 85 or 90% Cisco. So you're really talking about secondary Cisco.
Absolutely.
You know, a lot of talk amongst the dealers who were a tight-knit, close community about the invasion of counterfeit equipment, which really began way back in 2002, 2003. It's not a new issue. Maybe it's new on Cisco's radar, perhaps. We've been fighting it. We've been fighting with it and against it for probably 5 years.
No doubt.
We decided that we needed to regulate things. We needed to get people to agree to certain standards of behavior and ethics and fight the counterfeiters and so forth. So Network Liquidators and Network Hardware and Optimum Data, three members of the community, got together with lots of others, and I couldn't name them all, but most of the larger companies and many of the smaller ones, and formed UNITA formally about a year ago. Our annual meeting is coming up, which will be 1 year, just a little over 1 year after we were formally formed.
Right.
The association itself is well over 300 network equipment dealers worldwide in many, many countries.
Is that companies or individuals?
That's actually companies.
Wow.
Individual subscribers to the UNITA sort of association's information that we distribute is over 1,000 individuals.
Great.
So it's quite a large group, and all of them joined quite willingly and happily, like I say, a year ago. I think our membership drive was only a couple of months, and we got 300 and some members right off the bat. And the point of the organization is not only to regulate trade. I'd say that's probably the number one point, and that involves ethics and trade practices, things like standardizing the market. What does it mean to have a deal? What does it mean when you offer something with conditions? What conditions are acceptable and what aren't? What does a warranty mean?
Mm-hmm.
Standardization and trading practices was one early point. But from almost day one, the counterfeit equipment issue and, although less prevalent today, a couple years ago, stolen equipment, which Cisco had a huge problem with,
right.
We mostly eradicated that one,
mm-hmm.
Were right up there in the forefront of our minds when we formed the association.
And all these issues, it seems that it gives legitimacy to the secondary market, that it makes that we have a group and a voice and we do regulate our trade and we have different standards that we all have to adhere to. 99% of our the business partners are legitimate, but having this trade association as one body, I think, really lends that legitimacy.
Sure. And like any trade group, we're really a trade group. It's not a general public organization. We're really meant for the specialists in the secondary networking market, of which there are certainly a few that aren't members of UNITA, but far fewer than people think. I think the majority of the major players quickly gravitated to UNITA as the main organization representing their specific interests.
Okay. If you're looking to get in UNITA, how do you go about doing that to get in? Maybe John is the person to ask that as the membership chair?
Yeah, sure, I'll field that one.
Great.
Prospective members must fill out an extensive application. We have a number of requirements. I guess to give you a quick rundown, they have to have a valid website, a tax ID or VAT number.
Okay.
They have to be in business for a minimum of 6 months. They have to pay, obviously, their membership dues every year. There can't be any outstanding complaints, and they also have to sign our ethics document. Our whole goal is to provide a safe area for people to do business together.
Super. Are they voted in at the annual meetings, or is it throughout the year?
Well, we actually have quarterly meetings,
okay.
Membership meetings, and each company has to fill out the membership application. They send it in. They have to have other companies give them the thumbs up to join UNITA. And then what happens is we go through, the membership committee goes through the individual applicants, and then we send out our recommendations to the entire association of the 350-some-odd companies. What we do is we request if anyone's had any good or bad dealings with the company who's applying for membership, and then we work from there. And at that point, we bring it to the board, and each company is voted on and has to have a majority approval from the board of directors.
Sure. Okay. At the UNITA Las Vegas event coming up this month, in just a few weeks, what's planned for that as far, just quickly about the meetings, elections, parties, et cetera?
This is Mike. I guess I'll take that one
sure.
again. It's, like I say, it's our second annual meeting. We have more events scheduled this year than last, the beginning of which will be a board of directors meeting on Saturday, May 19th, and then a cocktail party for all members Saturday night. On Sunday, we have our annual meeting most of the day. It's from 11 or so through the afternoon, where we will have not only new board member elections, we will discuss issues like counterfeit equipment and how you best identify it. We'll discuss current trends in Cisco's involvement in our industry. We'll have breakout sessions about even things as potentially or seemingly unrelated as member FedEx discounts and healthcare. We've got a lot of different things we're trying to do on behalf of our members. That will all be addressed Sunday afternoon.
And then Sunday night, we have a large party for all of our members at a bar in Vegas. We have over 100, and I think it will be about 150 companies attending, so almost half our membership, and over 300 individuals at those events.
That's super.
So it will be a great cross-section of the industry and a great showing given how diverse both geographically and internationally our membership is. There's also a poker tournament and some other things that appeal to members. So pretty active schedule.
Getting together and sharing experiences is so important. And Bill and I, you know, and all of you guys, I'm sure we all can't wait to get out there and interact with each other, have a great time. So we're looking forward to that. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk about a little bit more about Interop Las Vegas and get into some of the issues on the, you know, the mind of Cisco users and dealers out there right now.
Attention shoppers, if anyone is missing a rather plump set of love handles, please come to the customer service counter and claim them. The ample love handles were lost in the produce department where their former owner had purchased fruits and veggies to munch on during the big game. Thank you and have a good day.
Small step number 81, snack on fruits and veggies. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to get healthy. Learn more at www.smallstep.gov.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
In a time when the broker market was overrun by trading sites and online auctions, trust was forsaken for convenience. Yet, a vibrant life rises in the Midwest to vanquish uncertainty. Dealers worldwide trust vibrant technologies for quality, expertise, responsiveness, and trusted drop shipments. Visit vibrant.com for showtimes and tickets. For servers, networking, and storage.
All right, we're back on Refurb Radio with the leaders of UNITA. We've been talking about the Interop conference and the UNITA meetings that are coming up in Vegas in a few weeks. And we're just going to briefly ask one more question on that topic before we get some of the more meaty Cisco issues of the day. Guys, I was wondering if you have a favorite Interop or UNITA memory from conferences past.
Uh-oh, the silence. Well, this is John.
Okay.
I'm not sure I actually have a favorite individual memory, but for me, the fantastic part about the annual UNITA meeting is it's almost like a class reunion.
Right.
You're able to go there and you see a lot of old friends while also making new friends, and these are individuals who you're on the phone with multiple times per day.
Mm-hmm.
It's been really nice. It's fantastically well attended every year, and you're also able to put a face to the name of someone who, honestly, you might talk to 50 times before you actually meet them, which is a little bit bizarre.
No doubt. It's always awesome.
I think this is Mike. From our perspective, it's always fun, because we have a small booth typically at Interop. It's always fun to have Cisco reps come up and ask you if they can buy something because they can't get it anymore from Cisco. I think those are always fun situations. So we chuckle about the same reps who are fighting against us so hard with our customers are often, you know, at Interop, they discover us for the first time and they go, oh, you mean that's where I can get an RSP4 or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And they're shocked to see the price versus what they need to get it for from Cisco Refurb or whatever. So well, there's always fun situations like that.
Yeah, and it seems like Vegas is just full of network dealers throughout town in that time. And most of the time they're going to the sponsored events. But I seem to remember like bouncing from one event to the other. And along the way you run into other dealers that you know. As you're going here and there throughout Vegas, you see people at 5 a.m. I thought I wasn't going to see anybody left. I walked into my casino, and the only person left gambling on the floor was another dealer still playing craps at the table. So,
uh-oh, watch it, Corey. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Yeah. Not necessarily with brokers. We probably all talk too much. Bill, you might have a least favorite story from Vegas.
I haven't been there.
I know, but I would figure that your least favorite thing is us telling you about all the stuff that happens when you weren't there.
Yes.
Sorry about that. Conrad, did you have anything on that?
Well, no, I want to amplify what John said. I think some of the strangest things are whenever you meet somebody who comes across as very conservative and very businesslike, professional.
Right.
And then you show up and you meet somebody with orange hair and piercings all over. It's that's a little bit of a jaw-dropping thing. And you're looking at the name tag thinking you've forgotten how to read.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. Let's move on from that. We'll go to some of the issues that have come up. Lately, there's been a lot of activity and discussion over at Network World's community, the Cisco Subnet at ciscosubnet.com. And that's been kind of a great piece for us to communicate to the general user base and enterprise users of Cisco hardware, network hardware, and a group of people have all been active there talking about issues. One issue that recently came up is that the Cisco is sort of launching a PR attack on the secondary market they announced at the partner conference. You know, I know Mike had discussed that at length, and would one of you kind of want to explain what Cisco's take is on the secondary market and how they're approaching it?
Sure, this is Mike. I guess I've been the most vocal about it. Cisco is it's perplexing what they're trying to do. The message is buying from the secondary market is risky or filled with uncertainty. You should be afraid of it, and that's the old FUD tactics are not unusual.
Right.
But the attention they're giving us and these articles on Network World were the number one or two read articles on their site for weeks in a row.
Wow.
So clearly the market's arrived and that there's a lot of awareness about it. And I think that's finally sort of caught Cisco's attention. Now, keep in mind, websites of Cisco secondary market dealers have been on Cisco webinar programs for years. It's not like Cisco suddenly discovered us.
Exactly.
But I think the recognition in their partner summit, as I said, that somebody, some genius at Cisco said, we're losing $200 or $300 million in revenue. Well, I think the three companies on this call represent more than $200 or $300 million in revenue. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the market's clearly much larger than that, and that's probably smacking them in the face a little bit. But the fundamental message that Cisco equipment in the secondary market is unreliable or potentially counterfeit, or how do you know it's going to work, is a sad message to send to Cisco customers. It basically means they're assaulting the value of your equipment the moment you buy it. I mean, imagine buying a Porsche for $85,000 and having it be worth $50 the next day. If Cisco had their way, that's kind of what they're trying to do to their own equipment.
Right.
Now, I assume leasing companies should be up in arms about this. I haven't heard from them, but that's a clear assault on their business.
Sure, there's no residual value then, right?
Yeah, zero, right? So whether it's a one-year lease or a five-year lease, you got to do 100% sunk cost lease.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume customers should be up in arms about it because Cisco's not the cheapest, and we've heard from a lot of customers that the reason Cisco equipment is affordable is they can count 2 or 3 years later on recouping 20, 30, 40 cents on the dollar, which is unheard of. If you buy a piece of extreme equipment, it really is worth a few cents on the dollar
right.
a month later in
mm-hmm.
many cases, or Foundry, less so with Juniper, but, God forbid, any smaller manufacturer than those. So it's a perplexing attack on their very own equipment. And I think the customers spoke loud and clear on Network World's site that the vast majority of the posts from customers said they've been buying equipment from us for years, us, the market, and that it was reliable and came with a great warranty and had been tested and was in great condition. And guess what? Was a third the price or even less of what they might have bought it for new. There's got to be value in that. And finally, I don't want to dwell on this point too long, but it's curious that Cisco would rather have customers buy 3Com because it's not like they're buying from us primarily because they either can't get it or they need it to be cheaper. And if we weren't selling Cisco, if they're successful in their attack on our market, we're just going to start pushing equipment like 3Com and Huawei and Force 10 and Extreme and Foundry, and then they're going to lose that $2 billion. I've never understood their assault on the market. I would think they'd want to be partnering with us, not attacking us.
And I'm on the same page with you, Mike. And let me speak as a person who's been in the Sun market for a long time. I've seen this happen with Sun. I've seen Sun lose huge market share because they were so combative against their user base. And they pounded, the users. They sent the PR messages out just like Cisco is doing now. Their users switched to IBM and HP. I've talked to the users who have done it. We helped them make that transition because they were just sick of paying, more for recertification than they would have paid for a refurbished Sun box. And those same issues are coming up now with Cisco.
Oh yeah, it's amazing that the lessons haven't been learned. Sun was doing the same thing Cisco's doing, emphasizing the price of the software versus the hardware.
Right.
And as soon as Sun reversed that position, as soon as Sun basically started giving away their software, the value of the hardware increased in the secondary market, and look what's happened to the company. Their sales have done something like tripled in the last 5 years, and their stock's gone from zero up to, a reasonable fraction of where it was a few years ago.
Absolutely. And that sort of came with a change in leadership, and yep. We're welcoming that change, and hopefully Cisco will see the light. But when you hear, PR reps out there that want to bunch us in as gray marketers and bring up terms that kind of make it cloudy to make it seem like the counterfeit equipment is coming through the secondary market, and they do everything they can to sully it, and then on top of it, charge these insane recertification fees.
Yeah, and I think those are two very good issues we ought to address, both the counterfeit issue and the recertification issue,
because right.
they're crucial.
Let's talk about the recertification issue. There, just the other day, that Brad Rees had another post about how recertification would cost more than a Cisco refurb unit, and obviously that's not fair. And UNITA's actually put out an official statement as a response to a post on Network World. Mike, I believe that, or the UNITA membership drafted that. And do you want to discuss that?
Sure. The recertification issue is a conundrum, right? They base the recertification fee on broad list price categories. So regardless of how old it is, regardless of whether it is currently in use or in vogue and highly valued or not, they also want you to pay a recertification fee on each and every component. The
wow.
real problem is the trick with the recertification fees for Cisco is they want you to pay a fee on each and every module, including GBICs, including power supplies, including fan trays, in a chassis. So a 6509 configuration that might cost $25,000 from Cisco refurb and might cost $10,000 from any member of UNITA, more or less, costs $20,000 or $30,000 to recertify, because each GBIC is $600. Now, I don't know that they're really breaking the law, but the list price of a GBIC is $500, and the recertification fee is $600. The list price of a fan tray is $500, and the recertification fee is $600. It's just nonsensical. And when you add in the fact that they want to charge you the same $600 recertification fee on a switch that can be bought new today for $500, but used might be $100, it's clearly not designed to service the customer in any way. What they say is, oh, we're verifying that it works and that the software is current, and then we'll agree to put it on Cisco maintenance. What they're really doing is making it logistically impossible from a cost perspective for you to buy the secondary market good, so the newer Cisco refurb is your only option.
Absolutely. I mean, some people say that their justification also is to pay for the time and the engineer to come out, but it's far beyond that time.
Let's address that.
Right.
I mean, that's what ought to occur. I mean, our company, and I'm sure most of the companies, I would have no problem paying a Cisco technician that comes with really good testing equipment, the $300 an hour or whatever they would charge.
Right.
What happens is the engineer comes out 2 or 3 weeks later, doesn't bring any equipment, asks that you turn it on, types show ver print, turns it off, and hands you a bill for $7,000. Customers ought to be outraged.
It's
that's
insane.
Ridiculous.
Hey, Mike, I've heard that. It's the Sun guy that comes out and tests those sometimes.
It's not even a Cisco specialist in some places.
It's Unisys. And in Santa Barbara, it's Unisys. So it's some guy who's a tech generalist who asks, you know, when they come to our site, Network Harbor puts it in their testbed chassis. Our engineers turn it on. Our engineers print out the information that they need. And you fill out a 6-page form, and you get a little thing that says it's now been recertified. The idea of recertification makes sense. I'm not sure as a manufacturer I'd want to warranty equipment that may or may not be in good condition myself.
Right.
But
and IBM.
If an engineer spends half a day at your site recertifying it, I don't know a consulting firm in the world or even a high-priced attorney that charges, you know, $1,500 or $10,000 an hour.
Exactly.
To do that work. It ought to be justified based on the whatever consulting fees are appropriate.
IBM has a great model for that. They pay, I think we pay $500 to have a system banded at something like $250 an hour for a two-hour recertification. We're fine with that, even though it usually takes 15 minutes. You know, it's very fair for systems that sell for $40,000 to $50,000.
Right. If
Cisco
came out with a better plan, the market would widely adopt it. They'd make lots more money in maintenance. They'd make lots more money in these recertification fees, which right now simply aren't done. You'd think as a high technology company, it's the same model Intel uses. If you cut the price in half, you sell four times as many, you'll make more money.
Right.
Don't they have to go and buy an iOS license on top of all this?
Keep in mind only about 15% of Cisco products or 20% actually have iOS issues.
Right.
The recertification process is on each and every module. So in a given 6500 config, there might be 15 recertifiable pieces, only one of which, the supervisor engine, needs a relicense. Now, yes, Cisco asks that you relicense those, and that's a separate issue. I think those fees are probably, you know, inordinately high as well. But it's really the combination of very high relicensing fees coupled with really insane recertification fees that make the whole process basically a non-starter. I mean, they might as well have no policy.
Those are all great points. This has been a great topic. We can probably continue it in a couple minutes and get to the counterfeit, but we do have to take a break now.
Okay.
My name's Rachel, and in 8 years, I'll be an alcoholic.
Kids who drink before age 15 are 5 times more likely to have alcohol problems when they're adults.
I'll start drinking in middle school, and I'll do some things I don't really want to do. So by the time my parents talk to me about it, alcohol won't be my only problem.
So start talking before they start drinking. To learn more, go to StopAlcoholAbuse.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and this station.
The answer is, they only work if you wear them. Yes, Jim?
What are life jackets?
Correct!
I'll stick with life jackets for 400.
They come in new lightweight styles, perfect for any boating activity. Jim!
What are life jackets?
Yes!
Life jackets for 600, please.
Emergencies on the water happen too fast to reach them if they are stowed. Darlene?
What are anchors?
No, I'm sorry. Jim?
What are life jackets?
Correct!
Be a winner. Boat smart. Boat safe. Wear it. This message brought to you by the National Safe Boating Council.
Okay, we're back with UNITA, and we were talking about Cisco's FUD attacks, PR attacks on the used market, and about the irrational recertification fees that are out there. Conrad, you were about to comment on that. Do you want to take that and run?
Yeah, sure thing. We have been around since 77, and we saw IBM absolutely dominate the mainframe market. But the reason they dominated the mainframe market was because they maintained a lease base that was just unbelievable because of the residual values. Part of the reason that leasing companies flocked to IBM was because you knew what you were getting as far as the equipment. You could write into your lease that people were going to have it maintained, that whenever it came out, it was going to be acceptable at the next location for maintenance coverage. So it maintained value at this location and at the next location. Cisco's policy is absolutely against their own equipment, it's against their own customers, and it's against the leasing companies. And recertification is a big part of that. I hope that we can work together with them such that it's a win-win for the Cisco customer, for Cisco the corporation, and for us as well.
I totally agree that a partnership model would be the best for all parties, from the stockholder to the reseller to the user. Conrad, you are definitely someone who, for UNITA, speaks out on counterfeit hardware. You know, first off, what is UNITA's take on counterfeit hardware? I think it's obvious, but I think we should speak to it.
Oh, sure thing. I mean, the UNITA has, as I think its first tenet in its code of ethics, any member who knowingly sells counterfeit hardware is in violation of the code of ethics, and essentially will be thrown out of the organization.
Absolutely.
And there's no ifs, no ands, no buts. If they knowingly sell it, they're gone.
Right. And have we had members kicked out up to this point?
Absolutely. You know, the problem, the only real problem we have is that darn word knowingly.
Right.
Cisco hasn't helped us to identify hardware so people can have a defense. You see the eBay sellers who mm-hmm. always defend themselves with, well, gosh, I didn't know.
Right.
Well, how do we set a standard if the manufacturer won't work with us on that standard? It's very much in our interest to identify counterfeit products such that it doesn't get to our customer. It damages our reputation. It damages Cisco's reputation.
Right.
So again, that's been the only problem. That's been our only hiccup in identifying and prosecuting counterfeiters that might be within our midst.
As a group, UNITA is developing collective intelligence on that information, though, aren't they? Specific examples of what they've spotted?
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, we're going beyond just serving our own membership on that.
Great.
First of all, we want to keep our members out of trouble. And to keep our members out of trouble, we've got to pool our information because we do have a lot of experience with seeing stuff that is not quite right and that has been identified as counterfeit.
Definitely.
We're going to go beyond that. I think you probably have seen that we've gone public and requesting Cisco come with us out to form some sort of a counterfeit task force. We're
right.
going to do it. It's in our interest. It's in our customers' interest.
Mm-hmm.
We think it's in Cisco's interest. We're going to do that. We're going to be out there. I guess we've probably waited for Cisco for too long to hop on board with this issue with us. we just have to do what we can do for our customers and for ourselves.
Yeah, we have to. I mean, at Vibrant, we've been setting aside anything that we find that's suspicious and collecting the data on it so that we can train, you know, our engineers to know what to look for. And we're going to be more than happy to share that information, you know, with UNITA, and as will all the members, because we have that collective intelligence to arm ourselves and our clients. I think often it seems like Cisco wants to do their best to put honest secondary resellers in the same boat as, you know, these guys who are explicitly trading in counterfeit knowingly. And we definitely, you know, as a group, need to address that.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
Well, keep in mind, Conrad mentioned that we're going beyond our members. We will
exactly.
We will hold at some point. We're developing the context and the content of these meetings now, but we hope by the end of the year to have the content ready to provide a series of seminars or meetings around the country and perhaps even around the world, where we'll invite not only UNITA members, but the Cisco community at large, Cisco partners. Because, again, when the counterfeits first came on the scene in 02 and 03, the secondary market certainly sold some, I'm sure, but it was Cisco's own partners that were as much the culprit as anyone, because these products came out of China in brand new Cisco boxes,
right,
looking beautiful. And the stories were rampant of even Ingram and Comstor and distributors in the U.S. and others falling prey to these counterfeit resellers. Now, I think the problem's gotten smaller than that recently.
It's pushed to the fringes.
But the counterfeiters are getting better, too.
Right.
So it behooves us all, I guess, to try to do our best. And we are doing our best. But as Conrad said, without formal assistance from Cisco, there's only so much, you know, hearsay and hearsay knowledge we can garner. Whereas Cisco basically has the answer key.
We can understand Cisco's point and also our point. We don't want to make all of this information public, so the ones who are truly creating and distributing the counterfeit know what we know their tells are and will adapt to that too. So that's a challenge as well.
Sure, but you got to make a choice.
Yeah. Right, you got to qualify people.
You side with your vendors and your market and you support your product, or
right.
I think you go to the dark side, like you introduced the whole topic. You go to the dark side and you prey on uncertainty and fear.
Absolutely.
And that's an easy choice, I think.
I think John and Mike, you guys are going to have booths at Interop, and so are we. That's one of the things as we're talking to people there. I'm certain that we're going to get questions about counterfeit hardware this conference, and it's one thing that, you know, everybody who's going to be at our booth will be prepared to talk about, and I'm sure you guys will do the same.
Of course, often with Cisco's own representatives, which is interesting.
Yeah, no doubt, exactly.
Who have less knowledge on the topic than most.
Well, one of our answers is always that the way we test is going to stop you from getting the counterfeit, whereupon if you go somewhere else, such as like an eBay, mm-hmm. you have a better chance of getting counterfeit equipment. Again, it's one of the benefits that we think UNITA brings as a whole to the industry.
Absolutely. I can't tell you how many times, you know, we've been offered counterfeit hardware only to see that, you know, same equipment turn up on eBay because they can't sell it to any legitimate dealer, so they go and just sell it on eBay and find a buyer for it there because the users are unknowing. They get it, and a lot of times they can't even tell when they install it. It's not until they have performance issues that it's a problem. So it's scary for a user, and if you go out to a legitimate dealer, you're going to get prices very similar to eBay, but you'll get that assurance as well.
Sure, and touching back into onto the membership requirements that we were talking about before, I do believe every company has to have a minimum of a 30-day warranty, which also helps you in the long run if there's any problems with the equipment that you purchase from a UNITA member.
Right, definitely. You know, you get that warranty, then you have time to send it back. But a warranty doesn't mean anything if you're dealing with an unreputable dealer, too. So, you know, it's great that that's there and that we know we're bringing in reputable dealers. But if you're going outside the network and just because someone's offering a warranty, I wouldn't say you'd absolutely trust them off the bat. Is there any other items you want to bring up along the lines of counterfeit?
Well, the only thing I would say is that it has been an ongoing problem, and it's been a source of member frustration because we've been looking out for what Cisco has identified as their own concerns. They don't want to give the tells away to mm-hmm. the counterfeiters. Well, we don't want to supply counterfeit to the customers.
It's terrible for our business.
And it's terrible for our business. It drives people away from Cisco gear because it is not as reliable. So I think, again, by putting customers first, That's kind of what UNITA has stood for. And quite frankly, it's very much in our own self-interest. But the frustration was there because we saw eBay and we saw people selling, obviously, counterfeit gear on eBay, and nothing would happen for a year or two.
Right.
And I understand that maybe we work under different rules. We can police our own better than we can police the world, but we just had to start. Finally, we just had to start. And part of forming UNITA was absolutely to make sure the reputation of the used industry was maintained.
When we go to these events, it's a family reunion, and there's a lot of really good people in the family, and you know, we're not the gray market or the black market that Cisco wants to make us out to be. We're honest businesses, you know, trying to do a good thing for our users, offering product that's been used before and definitely can be used again. That's great for the environment. It's great savings for the user, and obviously Cisco wants to protect their market share, but I think we all agree this isn't the way to do it. But
no argument here?
Yeah, no doubt.
It sounds fair to me.
Well, guys,
I guess on behalf of UNITA, we'd like to thank you for the chance.
Thank you.
To speak to you. I guess if anyone has any follow-up questions, UNITA.com is our website. They can certainly, I would assume, address questions through you, or feel free to drop us a line directly. I don't think any of us are very hard to find.
No doubt.
So, we're certainly honest in our assertion that we do want to engage Cisco. We have wanted to for a long time. So if somebody from Cisco is listening to this broadcast, please give us a call. We're ready to do the right thing, and we've been doing it for a long time.
That sounds great, Mike. Great. Gentlemen, thanks for being on today. It's been our honor and pleasure to have you here. It's been an awesome discussion. We'll look forward to saying hello to everybody at Interop and UNITA's meetings.
I'm excited.
Thank you, Corey.
Yep, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Corey. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too. Thanks to all of our listeners. It's hard to argue with the caliber of guests we had this week. It was an amazing show. Next week, stay tuned. We've got IBM's next-gen mainframe program initiator, Christine Harper. She's a IBM mainframe developer, and that should be a very interesting topic. I'll be out next week. Marty will be back, and he'll have Lindsay Gish in as a co-host. So we look forward to that, and thanks, everybody, for listening.
The opinions expressed on this refurbradio.com program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and do not reflect those of the sponsors or advertisers. Any rebroadcast of this program without the expressed written consent of refurbradio.com is prohibited.